Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice... Oh, this is the midweek version of that twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles, thread, and stab ground cloth.
And make art.
Okay. We can do that. Yep. I got in the mail a special treat.
I got something in the mail this week, too.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did.
Well, then you go first.
We got the same thing.
I think so.
Did you get a package from Gay Ann Rogers this week?
I did.
Yes. So the project that she launched in the summer that we were able to put a deposit on was just sent out. The rest of the actual kit was sent out this past week. So we each got a box in the mail. I'm very excited. And then I put it down. And of course, my husband said, "That's lovely. When are you going to finish all the other things you're working on?"
He doesn't get it.
No. No, which is fair. But and you know, so now I'm also falling into the pitfall of finishing projects and then having them sit there unframed or unfinished, mm-hmm. so that I have a completely done needlepoint thing that's just sitting there, and all I need to do is lace it and throw it in a frame, and I haven't done that yet. So then I feel guilty, so I'll start finishing a needlepoint project so that I can put that on a pile of things that's not framed. And so I'm finishing things, but not finishing them. And yeah, that's so.
Well, you're ahead of me. I'm not even finishing them. I'm just working at them. So.
Yeah. But I think that there is benefit to, I like the idea of working on a bunch of different types of things because I like to bounce back and forth. And in fact, I was thinking the other day, and the Gay Ann Rogers thing doesn't help this because that's more of a, needlepoint thing, and I already have something going that's like that, that I miss surface embroidery, and I don't have any surface embroidery or stump work projects going, and I would really like to do that because I gave it up after my car accident because I just didn't have the dexterity to do it. But now I do, so I want to get back to it. So I've been kind of hankering to kind of start something, so sort of percolating in the back of my mind is what is it that I want to do as a new project? But then there's the, maybe you should finish off something else. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet.
For that. Yeah. Well, my large, and it's a rather large work table, got to the point where I had a little, maybe foot by 2 foot area where I could actually put things down. So a couple weeks ago, I said, all right, enough of this noise. And it was a good 2 hours cleaning up and putting stuff away. Cause I'd pulled things out and looked at them and set them aside and all right, this is nuts. So I cleaned things up, put them away, and I had this beautiful clean table. I had my one basket where I keep all my threads for active projects in, and mm-hmm. that was it. And everything else was cleaned off. And now I don't have any room because I started the Debbie Rowley's opal, her Glitz and Glamour opal, that's on the stand. Well, that means that the Sarah Brazier 36-inch long thing had to sit somewhere. So I sat that on the table. And of course, that takes up a massive amount of room because I'm stitching the two interchangeably, but I got to find a better solution for that because I can't have it laying on the table because it just takes up too much space. And then I had this Gay Ann Rogers, Echoes 2 Tudor Rose samplers. What I got, is that the same one you got?
Yes.
That came. So then I had that stuff all spread out just because I wanted to look at it. Cause this is the first kit. Now, I have two charts from Gay Ann, but this is the first kit. Wow. She knocked it down, I think. Wow.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. And it's nice because there's so many different like bits and baubles and fun things in there.
Yeah, I mean it's just all of it right here, 'cause what is there? 10, this is the scary part, 10 spools of Krynek.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun. And then Now here's where Gay Ann, I really admire her. Swa Delje threads, and she's given us whatever lengths we're going to need. It looks like 5 or 6 lengths, full lengths of thread in different colors. So we'll see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So 10 different colors of Swa Delje silk thread. And what a job. I mean, she created tags and stapled the tags around those things. So we have them. And then there's some DMC pearl. One lonely skein of DMC floss right here. Number 822. One lonely skein. And then a skein of impressions. And that's it. But what a complete package. And then, I have not opened them yet, but the beads.
Yeah, I know.
Just looking through the bag. Oh, man.
And I haven't done any work with beads like this before, so that's going to be really fun. And I looked at the chart, too. So I started, and, you know, really looking at the photo of the piece itself. It's got so many different things between the pulled thread work, the black work, the Tudor rose, which, of course, you know, is just, such a meaningful thing for my family. The piece itself is just, it's beautiful. And so many different, it's almost like if you wanted to try your hand at a couple of different styles of things and you didn't know if you'd like them, you know, try a couple of stitches of black work and try a little bit of beading and try a little bit of pulled work. This is a great piece to do it if you don't mind jumping in sort of head first, because I don't know, you know, she always describes her pieces as not being very complicated. And I don't think any of the stitches themselves are particularly difficult, but there's a lot going on there, and it's not going to be something you can whip off in a weekend for sure, because it's got a lot to do. But there's so many different types of things that you can really get a sense of, all right, well, I love doing the black work, but I didn't like doing beads. And, you know, it would be a great piece to try on things.
Yeah. You know, that's spot on. And I had not looked at it that way. Cause when you look at the piece, it is impressive as all get out. Cause she has the cover shot, but then she includes a full 11x17 page mm-hmm. with a photograph. And when you look at it, it's absolutely stunning on all counts. And at first glance, you would almost walk away like, I can't do that.
Right. It looks like it's going to be really, really, really difficult. And it is a very, very impressive piece. And I would encourage people to not look at it as, oh, this is an expert piece and I could never do that. I would look at it as, and, you know, again, I'm prone to do this. Look at it as the little tiny elements in the piece, because you can break it into pieces like that. There's, you know, if you look in the top corners, there's the little tiny pieces of black work with the crowns. And then there's the Tudor roses that are their own style. And then there's the pulled work, right? And some people have gotten the versions that aren't pulled work, but look like pulled work, so you can make it a little easier for yourself. So there's all these different styles or types of needlework that you can try, and they're broken into little chunks. So you can, it's doable, right? You just have to kind of go at it and not be afraid to try to do it, even though it looks like it's very difficult to do because it's so impressive, because it has so many different elements in it. But each of the elements on their own aren't particularly difficult.
No, and now that you describe it that way, that really sheds a better light, not a better light, but a different light for sure, and a very positive light on this thing. And you just got to do little sections of different styles, and then look at in the end what experience you'll have out of this.
Yeah, because you might find that, oh wow, I'd never tried black work because it looked kind of dull, but I really enjoyed sort of the rhythmic part of it and the geometry of it.
Yeah. No, it's I'm in this. You know, this is the problem. See, I got this, and I think, oh man, I want to put this on stretcher bars and start this thing.
Yeah, you want to jump in, right? I know.
But I got these others that I want to finish up. And But no, this is, and what a kit. I mean, I am not a kit person. I would rather buy my stuff and know that I have enough. And I'm more than confident that Gayanne has made sure that we have more than enough thread and other supplies to do this job. I'm going to be very careful to not lose one single bead, though. I mean, you could just tell that this is all put together with the instructions. There's some 64 pages. I was going through that. I'll tell you what, if you can't follow instructions, if you can't follow these instructions, I'm going to be hard to help you. I mean, this is as clear as day. These are beautifully done.
And I think that's one thing that I've started to find too, is that there's a big difference between well-written and poorly written instructions, because as a beginner, there are some designers that write instructions that as a beginner, you can look at the picture and you can read the words and you can do the stitch no matter if you've never done it before in your life. And there are other designers that write instructions and, you know, it could be the simplest thing in the world to do. It could be as simple as a cross stitch and you look at the chart and you are completely lost because there's some simple thing that has been either assumed or left out that if you don't just know, or if you assume, or you assume poorly, or you just, you know, don't happen to go the way that they intended, that, you know, you screw it up. So it makes a big difference who's writing the instructions. I think there's a very, very large difference between good instructions and adequate instructions.
Oh, without a doubt. And when I was, I've got a bunch of older, much older projects. We had have had a couple of instances where members in the Fox Valley or the Fox Needlepoint Guild have died, and then their stash becomes something that all the members can just take what you want, and then you give a check for whatever you feel like giving to the memorial fund for the chapter. So you accumulate you can accumulate quite a bit of stuff. And there's a black work piece and a couple of other things that are quite old that I have that I thought, oh, these would be fun to do. And I've actually opened them up to look at the instructions and compared to the instructions we get today from, say, Gayanne Rogers or Debbie Rowley or Nicola Parkman, huge difference in a lot of assumptions made. And you immediately get that feeling in your head like, oh, I'm going to actually have to think about this one. Or I'm going to have to use my experience, you know, because this instructions are not going to guide me well. And, because there is a big difference. I think some of that is, well, number one, expectations, but number two, computers and software and, the ability to illustrate better. But, some of those old ones, oh boy, what a challenge to stitch them. Especially if you've had no experience, if it's a technique you've had no experience at, then
I think that's a good point though, because it may be that it's just an artifact of how we learn needlework now, because if you think about it, if now we are in a position where we can learn all these different styles, you know, where we can kind of take bite-sized pieces of lots of different things, we're going to be delving into lots of different styles and we need better instructions. Whereas, you know, in the past where you would have to sit in a class and learn, you know, there would be the assumption that you had some basic knowledge of something.
Right.
And then you could take a pattern and just read it. Like you could take a cross-stitch pattern. Once you kind of know cross-stitch, you can just take a chart without any written instructions and pretty much follow it. Right. So, you know, in the past, if you learned cross stitch from a family member or something like that, you would just be able to follow. So it may be that, you know, at that time, that would have been something that would have been assumed knowledge.
Yeah.
Whereas now it isn't, because those are things that are skills that aren't taught.
Right. Well, and kits and instructions written so that new people can have success. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was working on the Glitz and Glamour Opal last night and doing Jessica's.
Yeah.
And which Jessica's, once you've done, I think I've said this before, once you've done two or three, there's really nothing to them. You're just going around the circle. And they're pretty straightforward. But then I took a moment just to read Debbie's instructions, and I think it's 2 pages plus, and she breaks it all down. You know, here's the first 6 stitches that gets you going around the circle. Then here's the backs, you know, the top and the back side. And then when you get down to sharing the hole with your first up stitch, that's when you start going underneath. And she explains all this in just infinite detail. And so the end result is anybody who's never done a Jessica with those instructions and illustrations would have success, probably right out of the gate. And, right. And, you know, and that's what allows people to tackle stitches that on the surface look really intimidating. But mm-hmm. once you you have decent instructions, you realize, oh, there's really nothing to this. And
right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with a chart. So Debbie will do that. And she isn't assuming that you've done the 10 charts prior so that she could say, do a Jessica that you learned in chart one. You know, if you're right. doing Diamond Delight 10, well, you've done 1 through 9, so I don't have to explain Jessica to you. Every single one, she explains the stitch from start to finish. So each of those in themselves is you know, really a course in needlework. So, you know, I think they're great teaching pieces, honestly.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. And that's where this Gay Ann Rogers, this, you talk about a teaching piece. You know, as I said, just look at the experience you're going to have when you get done with this thing. And
yeah.
Holy smokes, 64 pages of showing exactly how to do every stitch, charts, clear as a bell. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. I want to stitch it right now.
I know. Well, you know what? I think for me, I'm going to follow the old parent rule.
No, not that rule. No.
So, you know what rule I'm going to take out, right? It's the you can't take out another toy until you put one back.
Yeah, that rule. Yeah, I hate that rule. I hate that rule.
I know. So I think that's what my rule is going to be, at least for now. It's going to be one of each thing. I'm not going to say, you know, I can't have more than X number of things, but one of each style of thing, because I do enjoy bouncing back and forth because each thing offers a different area of pleasure to me. Right. And some things are small and some things are big. But I definitely want to be able to do different styles because, you know, it's different. They serve different purposes. And the other thing is that I definitely also, want to start smalls again. And I always get the itch right around now, which is about 3 months too late. Because it's right time to start thinking about Christmas ornaments.
Yep.
And but what I would love to do, so I was thinking about this the other day, I would love to find old, like, 1950s style ornament patterns. Do you know what I mean? I wonder if such a thing exists, because there must be. Because they're, you know, obviously people have been doing needlework all this time. And we know that in the 1970s because I was there, but I wasn't there in the 50s. So what were the sort of going patterns? I have to go to the library and see if I can find some, because I would love to do some sort of retro kind of little ornament, just like little smalls, because they're quick to do. They're easy to do in transit. You know, while I'm on a ferry or something like that.
Yep.
I think that would be kind of fun to do.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it would be interesting to dredge up some 50-year-old designs to see what was being done. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Style ones. Although I could look at them and say, well, that's really not my thing too. I mean, that's entirely possible.
Right. But worth a shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of those old things, you know, Arlene is one an old book hound, like a book sale, she's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last time that she was with us, afterwards, I was just kicking myself because our library in the last 6 months has had 2 book sales because most libraries are trying to get their number of books down because they just take up space anymore and people don't check them out. So 2 book sales, and both times, and I drive by the library just frequently, and both times my reaction is, oh, good, a book sale, just a bunch of old books. And what an idiot I am, because, yeah, a bunch of old books. And how many of them, how many needlepoint books were in there, or needlework books of any kind were in there that I could have picked up for a buck or two? What, you know, why didn't I think these things through and go over there and latch onto those? And so the next time they have a book sale, I'm there. I'm absolutely there. Because, you know, I just did, a bunch of old novels that, you know, no thanks. But no, there probably are a whole bunch of needlework books that are just waiting to be had for a buck a piece.
Yeah, so. And there may be patterns or, you know, like cross-stitch things. Or there's always, like, good, I think the best things, like holiday books. That's what I think they're the best for. Because I remember, you know, being a kid and going to the library for holiday craft books, because there were just loads and loads and loads of them. Because Better Homes and Gardens used to publish holiday books of crafts and things. And usually they're not just one craft. There's lot, you know, they're blended ones. So you'll have some cooking, you'll have some sewing, some cross stitch, some lots of things. But you'll find, you know, and those kind of don't go out of style.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, and that's just it. Yeah, Good Housekeeping, Better Homes and Gardens. All those, I mean, at one time they had massive publishing operations on top of their magazines of all kinds of stuff. And it was all quality stuff, too. It wasn't it wasn't just throwaway cheap stuff. And, all those books, I got to believe libraries have them and are itching to get rid of them. So,
Yep. I remember you used to be able to go through and you could go back through every year. They would have, like, the 2017, 16, 15, 14, 13, you know, Better Homes and Gardens Christmas issue. And it would be all the Christmas crafts.
Yeah.
That was my, like, one of my favorite things when I was a kid, was to sit and go through those books, because they had, and again, it was all different kinds of crafts, but I love that.
Yep. Well, next time there's a sale at the library, I am going there.
Yeah.
I'm doing an Arlene. I'm going to go get me some books. Yep. Oh, and speaking of framing things, Mary Corbett with one T had a thing the other day. Casey Granke, Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stitch Life Studio. It's a Etsy shop. I thought these things were pretty neat. I don't know if you got a chance to look at them, but they're frames that are designed to go over hoops. So you finish a project, keep it in the hoop, or put it in a hoop that you don't mind hanging on the wall for a long time. And then she is selling these frames that are designed, you just, with elastic bands that go across the back to hold the hoop in place, and it creates a frame. So you have a finished piece by simply slipping your hoop under some elastic straps. And I just thought it was really creative, and their quality. Because when I saw it on Mary's site, I thought, oh, these are, you know, chintzy balsa wood painted on things, and I'm not interested. And then when I went to the Etsy store, no, they're made out of maple and walnut, and they're laser etched, and they're finished beautifully. And because I looked at the prices, and it was 16, 20, 25 bucks, something like that. I thought, I'm not paying that for balsa wood. And then I started reading the instructions. Oh, this is the real deal. These are quality frame materials, and well finished, and really look nice. So I think that's a really great thing, and easily interchangeable too. You could have a frame and stitch, you know, four or five small things that were seasonal, and swap them out. And
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So, and you can get those cheap just hoop frames from Michaels,
right?
Too, like really, really inexpensive. I mean, you couldn't. They would be tough to make workable as a workhorse hoop that you would use over and over again, but as something you would frame. You could use them, and, you know, small hoops are 50 cents, a dollar a piece, something like that. So,
right.
You know, you could stitch in your regular, and, you know, I'm a big fan of the plastic frames, which I know you thought I was crazy for until you saw one in action, the plastic embroidery hoops.
Right.
Because
yes.
at, when you first think about it, a plastic embroidery hoop seems like the dumbest idea ever. But what makes them great is that on the inside, the outer hoop has sort of a divot on the inside of the hoop, and the inner hoop has a ridge, so that when you put the fabric in there, it just locks it in tight as a drum, and that fabric does not move at all. So those hoops are tremendous. They work phenomenally well. So I would use those, and then I would just pop it into one of these little wooden frames and make sure it stays in well.
Yep.
And then put it in one of the hoop covers.
Yep. No, these are great looking. I I gotta quit spending money, but think I might get a couple of these just to have, because what a quick, easy way to frame up a piece of needlework and have it look good and know that you can swap it out and minimal effort. Really, really a nice idea. 3, 4, 5, and 6 inch hoop sizes, so you can any number of things. But and it wasn't all circled openings, because that was the other thing I was expecting. Was all right. Yeah. What if I have something that's oval or square or something? No, she has frames cut with diamonds and opals, or ovals and squares and rectangles, all kinds of things, so you can fit your piece in. That's just to me one of those really innovative things, which is why Mary Corbett had it on her site, because it was.
Yeah.
But we'll put a link for it. But it's Kacee, Kacee, and Gronke, Granke, Stitch Life Studio.
And they're beautiful. The laser etching on them is really, really lovely.
Yeah, yeah, really well done, and real wood too. It's not just balsa wood with a veneer on it or something. So yeah, because that's what I expected, was thin plywood with a veneer or any number of things. But nope, it's the real deal. So yeah, check those out. Worth it.
Pretty cool.
Yep. And then call attention again to our Bathia video, which has been very popular. We talked about that last week, the reversible band sampler from Hands Across the Sea Samplers. And boy, lots of views on that. So check that out. Even if you're not going to stitch it, check it out, because it's just beautiful. It really is. Just a gorgeous sampler. So be sure and check that out last week and on our YouTube channel. And then if you want to take the class with Nicola in the spring in the U.S. at Sassy Jack's in the Attic, both places have them. Just contact them. And as far as I know, they still have space left. So you can do that. Fobbles in the U.K., if you're in the U.K., the November 5 and 6 still has spaces available. But I got a feeling you better hurry on that one.
Mm.
Filling up, yep. But yeah, check out that thing. And then we didn't get to this last week. I thought it was some interesting, this again from Mary Corbett's page, or Mary Corbett's Facebook page. Gil Warren had written, "How do I remove lead pencil lines from my cream linen embroidery? Also Red Taylor's chalk lines." And I thought that the idea, especially with pencil lines, was you just stitch over them, but I can see if you changed your mind while stitching and decided not to follow that line, then there's that pencil. And I'd seen other people mention the first, there were several options posted that were interesting, but Crystal Mills posted the one that I had seen before, an Alvin 1248 professional drafting cleaning pad for pencil, which is like a sack full of eraser chunks.
Mm-hmm.
That I've seen other people suggest using that. You can just get it on Amazon or I'm sure any drafting thing. But that one I had seen, so you just gently erase the, use that to gently erase the pencil mark. But I got to believe you have to be pretty careful. You'll scuff up the linen and leave a different spot only equally visible. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was suggested. And then somebody suggested that laundry spot remover gets blue lines out, but didn't suggest that worked for pencil. And then I love the silly putty for chalk. Because she asked about, that's the old, we used to use that on the comic strips on the news. Yeah, on the newspaper. Yep, yep. Silly putty. Yeah. So I never understood what the end game was there.
That was the end game.
I know, but if you think about it, for what?
That's exactly why. Because then you would stretch them.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, you had that. That's right. You could make them look goofy. Yeah. But really, if you think about it, you're transferring ink to Sully Putty, and now it's reversed. And yeah, you can stretch it, but then what?
Okay, but people sit and play Call of Duty for like 6 hours straight shooting people so that they have a score. For what end?
Okay. All right. Okay, I can ride along with that. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I just never did get that. I did it. I did the silly putty a lot, but what am I doing here? What did I get out of this? Dirty silly putty. Because that's what happens.
That's what you do.
Yeah, it starts to get a grungy look to it. Yeah, so one of those kid things, you know. Fun to do, yep. I guess. Yeah. So, so silly putty for chalk. That was a good idea. And then this one I thought was interesting. Beverly Clements suggesting that you spray the fabric with starch first so that your pencil marks or chalk marks are going on the starch.
I don't know if she's suggesting it, maybe that's true.
Yeah, I mean,
because maybe the starch walk. I mean, but don't you have to wash the starch out then?
And that's where I got stopped, because if you stitch with silk or something, then you really can't wash it. But if you're stitching with DMC or some color fast cotton floss, then yes, you could wash it and. I guess it would wash out. The starch would wash out and take the pencil with it. Yeah.
Or maybe it just erases easier because the starch is there. So when you start lifting it with the eraser, the starch particles sit on the surface of the fabric. Mm. So then the pencil will sit on the surface of the starch. So then the pencil will come off easier.
That would make some sense, I think.
It does, right?
Yeah.
I don't have an experience with it, but that seems the most sensible.
Yeah. So that was, it was a nice quick list. People were firing them off pretty quickly there about how to deal with that. Because, yeah, at some point, if you do embroidery to any degree, you're going to have areas where you can't cover it because you decided the leaf should go this way instead of that way. Mm-hmm. And that pencil then needs to come out. So all these little tricks, it's fun to read those. All the little tricks that people have for doing things that either got passed down or they just figured out or just took a shot at it, you know?
Sometimes you have to. I mean, you have nothing to lose, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Oh, and that was the other thing I wanted to mention about Gay Ann is I found it really interesting that she sent a doodle cloth. She sent the piece of Congress cloth for the actual piece, but then she sent a piece of doodle cloth. Which I thought was excellent, because there are several places on here where you could tell you're going to need to use a little practice. And, that's something I've been reminding myself of more and more is when I do stitching, I need to, rather than experiment on the live canvas, I need to get a piece of canvas out or some cloth and just practice on the side.
Warm up a little.
Yeah. Cause there's nothing wrong with practice. It's okay. it's just fine. So, I wanted to mention that. And then I wanted to come back to what we were talking about last week, where we were talking about people advancing to linen.
Mm-hmm.
And because we went down a different path, but this whole concept, I think, is interesting of, and it falls into the Gay Ann Rogers thing too, of are you really advancing? You know, are you moving when you're stitching? Is there really an advancement, or is it just a different kind of stitching? Like if you stitch on 8 all the time and then you do something on linen, is that really advancing or is it just different? I don't know well, that there's, is there really advancing in this thing?
Okay. So here's another question. Why is it the ground cloth that's defining what's advanced and what's beginner? Why is it not the thread or the technique of the thread?
Thank you. Yes.
Because I would argue that something like cross stitch might be a beginner thing and gold work and couching is an advanced thing. Or stump work might be an advanced thing versus cross stitch, which has nothing to do with ground cloth at all.
Right.
And really it's not so much, you know, the advanced versus beginner part, it really has less to do with, okay. So there's a lot of different things about this whole concept of advanced and beginner because it's different skill sets, right? There's the technical aspect of it. There's the artistic aspect in the sense of composition. There's color theory aspect. So you can have someone that's technically fantastic, but is not a great designer or a good color person. And you can have people that are, a whiz at designing and come up with these great pieces and beautiful colors, but technically maybe aren't the best, but then they give the piece to somebody else and they execute it phenomenally. So, who's more advanced? It's very subjective.
Right. Yeah, that's just it. But I think you just said it when you said, why is ground cloth determining advanced or beginner? Because I don't. Why is that?
I think it's a shortcut. I think it's a little bit of a shortcut. And I think to a degree we should give a little bit of guidance, because what you do want to give somebody a little bit of guidance in a sense, because if you're going to take a class, or especially if you are looking for something in particular, you would like to know, is this a class that's going to be geared towards beginners or geared towards advanced learners, right? Because if you're a beginner and you're sitting in an advanced class where you have instructions that are not a Debbie Rowley instructions, where somebody's going to make assumptions about things and they're going to rip through the beginning of it really, really quickly and then get on to the very finer aspects of how do you improve stitches you already know, or how do you work on a technique that requires you to have some basic knowledge, that would be good to know. Or, on the flip side of that, if you are looking for a basic class because you've never done this before, you want to know that as well. So I think that there is, from a teaching perspective and from an advertising class perspective, there should be some delineation between what's a beginner class and the intermediate and an advanced class, so that you can decide what's the appropriate class for you to take.
Yes. Now that I agree with you 100%. Yes. That, what level of instruction am I going to get?
Right. So that I think is definitely true, because there's nothing worse than sitting in a class that's the wrong level. And if you're a person who's been stitching for a very long time and you get into a class and they're teaching you how to do a French knot and you're bored silly and you feel like you're wasting your time, or if you're sitting in a class that is an advanced class and you've never stitched anything in your life and you're lost, then you're very discouraged. So that's not helpful. But to say that a piece, you shouldn't try that piece because it's too hard, that I think is maybe not the best way to approach something, because I don't like discouraging people from trying things if they have the will to do it. And if they have the ability to say, I'm going to try this and it may not be perfect and I'm going to learn how to do it by doing it. Right. So you can try something that's very difficult. And sometimes it's better to try something easy. Like, I guess, so making clothing is probably a really good example. Making clothing, I wouldn't try making a men's suit as my first time using a sewing machine, because a men's suit, there's a lot that goes into making a man's suit as far as curves and fitting and things like that to make a man's suit fit perfectly, because the real art to a man's suit is the fit and the drape. And if you don't get that spot on, and that comes from years of experience, it's going to look kind of meh, right? But you could make a lady's skirt or a sundress or something like that, easy peasy, and it would be a win right out of the gate. So in that regard, there are some things that you, I think, are beneficial to do an easy thing first to sort of get a feel for. And that, I think, is just, that's getting used to your tools. It's learning your machine, learning how your sewing machine works, learning how your needle and thread works, learning how, learning how to adjust the tension on a sewing machine. It's like any kind of tool. If you're a woodworker, I'd do the same thing, right?
Right.
But for needlework, I mean, it's a needle and thread. So I think you have a little bit more leeway as to how difficult a stitch you want to try, because truly all it is needle through fabric and needle down through fabric. So it's how complicated of a stitch do you want to try, because it's still, every time it's still going to be needle up, needle down.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, it does. And, I'm sitting here looking at, because I hauled it all out, the Gayanne Rogers Tudor Rose sampler. And I think, all right, as a whole, you would look at that and you'd say, wow, that's a really advanced piece. I'm not sure I could tackle that. But then, as you've already suggested multiple times here, look at in each of four corners is a little blackwork thing.
Mm-hmm.
Could I do that? Sure, I could do that. That's pretty straightforward. I could do a little blackwork piece. And then, there's just some basic needlepoint things. And you look at each of those sections. Could you do those? Of course you could. So then it's a matter of how you approach it mentally. Do you look at it as the body of work? Or do you say, I can do this section. And this one I've never done, but I think I can figure it out. Doesn't look too hard, and the instructions are pretty clear. So I'll do that. And then it's just a matter of all these little things that assembled make a pretty impressive piece.
Yeah.
But there's no difficulty, no high level of difficulty in any one of them. It's just the mental approach that you take to it.
Right. And perhaps the difficulty lies, and it's not difficulty really, it's a stamina thing. When you're starting out, so the Sarah Brazier piece is an example of this for me. So because I'm using such different threads and different fabric, for me, it's a lot of stopping and starting. So what would take you or someone else that's using the prescribed threads and fabric, you start, you use the thread, you stitch the piece, it's done. Then you move on to the next, little motif, you stitch it, it's done. For me, I'm starting, I look at it, I don't like it, I rip it out. I start, that's not exactly what I want either, I rip it out. So it's a lot of time invested, and it takes a lot longer. So I think the limit there is not the difficulty of the piece, it's the size.
Yes.
So for a beginner, you have to take into account a little bit of how much, so what is your level of patience? And that, I think, is an individual thing. Do you, as a person, have the patience to sit with a large piece? Because I'm not talking about size-wise, I'm talking about complexity-wise. This is a large piece complexity-wise. It has a lot of elements. Do you have the patience to sit there and really focus and really concentrate for a long period of time throughout a long piece? Because that's what it would take to get through this entire piece, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As opposed to something else that would be, a quarter of that size and small, which would be considered a beginner piece because you can get it done pretty quickly. Or something that's, big but is just continental stitch.
Right.
So that's where I think that you have to weigh what your stamina is, what's your appetite for novelty and appetite for newness. If you are a very if you don't get bored easily, or not, it's not even get bored, if you have a lot of I guess the word is stamina for going after something that's going to be a lot of hard work, because it's hard work to learn something that's new. you know, let's not be, you know, flip about it. It's going to be difficult to learn something that's new, and all of those parts may be new to you. If it's a big piece, you're going to be working on it for a long time, and each time you pick it up, it's going to be hard work. Do you have the time and mental effort right now in your life to do that? And that may be true today, and it may not be true a month from now. And that goes back to the whole thing that we talk about having multiple pieces going on at the same time, because sometimes you need to be able to say, this is a piece that requires my significant mental effort. I need to put it away for a month because my life is not allowing me to invest in it. Right?
Right. Well, yeah. And that's that other fact. See, stamina, that mental stamina, that's the phrase. I like that because I just don't see, I mean, you can point to projects and designs that you would say advanced. You know, anyone would say, yeah, that takes another level of skill. Yes, you can find those. But I think the vast majority of them, that is not the case. And I think you hit it on the head. The mental stamina. Are you willing to hang in there? Are you willing to hang in there for a hands across the sea giant sampler where there's nothing difficult about any of it other than it's big and you just got to do this motif and that motif and just keep plugging away. Are you willing to hang in there with a Debbie Rowley large design, Tropical Punch, for instance, with lots of different stitches that's quite large, what, 17 inches, I think, something like that. But nothing really particularly difficult. But yeah, do you have the stamina? Are you willing to hang in there? Or are you the kind, and there's nothing wrong with it, are you the kind of person who wants to finish things quickly? So, you know, give me Christmas ornaments or give me little small things because I want to start them and finish them. I need that satisfaction of being finished. Or are you the person whose mind says, hey, I'm in it for the ride. You know, I'm just, and if it's 2 years from now, so what? You know, I'm good. Yeah, I just really struggle with this advancing to. Because I don't think there's a lot of needlework that is, you know, that you advance to. I think it's just, yeah, it's a different technique.
I think, yeah, and I think we, so what we've figured out, and I think this will probably end up continuing this conversation, I think it's moving away from the idea that it's a ground cloth based thing, and moving even a little bit away from the idea that it's technique based thing where needle point is easier than, you know, than surface embroidery, because I don't think that's necessarily true either. I think they're just different. And perhaps it's, you know, your choices of fiber, because I think there is an argument to be made that stitching with pearl cotton is easier than stitching with neon rays or easier than stitching with some of the metallic threads.
Yes.
And I think that certain stitching techniques are more difficult. You know, something like silk shading, that I think takes practice. And that, again, I think it's not so much an idea that it's difficult as there are some things that you can get right out of the bat, where if you stitch with pearl cotton, you know, it's pretty much easy. Once you get the tension, which you can get pretty quickly, you're going to get it right pretty much every time. Whereas other things like the Krynex, you really have to stitch with them a little while to get the idea that, oh, you know, when I stitch it today, tomorrow, after it relaxes a little, it's going to look different. So I know I'm going to have to, you know, preemptively adjust the tension this way so that tomorrow it looks that way. Like those are the sorts of things where experience is going to contribute. I think there are certain areas of needlework where experience does play into it. And so that's where I think you get into something that you would consider advanced, right? Where
right. You
know, something like silk shading, to me, that becomes something that I think is a little bit more advanced because it's the idea of learning how to blend colors. That I think takes it, and really all it is practice. But that's where I think the difference is between a beginner and an advanced needleworker is just practice.
Well, yeah, but that's execution. You know, that's execution, like needle painting. I think anyone with some decent instructions could get a needle painted piece that you could stand to look at. Could you get one where the colors flow beautifully from light to dark, you know, over a real smooth gradation? Yeah, that's experience, no doubt about it. But you could still get a respectable look with some decent instruction. But
yeah,
but that's experience. That's experience. But I just don't know. I just don't know if you advance. I think it's you have experience and you execute better. But a good cross stitcher, an experienced cross stitcher's piece, will look infinitely better than the same one done by a beginner. But the beginner would still mm-hmm. deliver something you could look at.
Yeah.
An advanced person stitching two strands would lay all the strands so they were side by each, and it would mm-hmm. be very smooth, and the tension would be even across the board, and you wouldn't be, there wouldn't be any carried threads or any, all those little things that raise it to a new level. But the beginner could still pull off a respectable piece.
Right. Right. And I think the other difference is that an advanced person, their stitching will be a lot faster.
Yes. Yes. Don't have to stop and think about it. Yeah.
You don't stop and think about it. Your hands are quicker. You're more sure about where your needle is going. So your stitching is a lot faster.
Yes.
You know, it's muscle memory at that point.
Right.
Right. So you're a quicker stitcher.
Oh yeah. All the things that save seconds, starting and ending threads, making, finding the hole that the needle has to come up from. Yeah, an mm-hmm. experienced stitcher just has a feel and just goes like a machine. And, you can watch any number of floss tube stitch with me's. And mm-hmm. you watch the really experienced people. And it's just...
And they just whip through things.
Yeah, they just flow along. It's just a nice, even flow. They're not hunting the needle keeps coming up 2 inches to the left. Where the heck is it? That kind of thing. All those things take time, and they just stitch, and it just goes. And that's just experience. But I just struggle with that advance in this particular area. Yeah, I think your description of making a men's suit with a sewing machine is spot on. That's advanced. That's experience. That's making a billion mistakes. That's learning how to tailor. It's a whole lot of things.
It is. But I think here's the important thing for me, I think. Stitching is about making things that you love and making things that you love to look at, that you want to have. So if you feel like the only way you can get to something you love, if what you love to look at is stump work, let's say, and we'll look, just arbitrarily make that the example of advanced, right? If what you love is stump work and that's what you want to own and have in your home, if you feel like the only way you can do that is by doing, 12 needlepoint pieces first and 12, Ada cloth cross or whatever cross stitch pieces, and then before you can even start surface embroidery, and then you have to do surface embroidery before you can even start a stump work piece because you feel like you aren't advanced enough, drop that line of thinking immediately, because I think that's a terrible way to go about doing it, because there's no way to faster squash a desire to learn how to do something than to force yourself to do something you don't like. It becomes the old trope of doing scales on a piano, right?
Yeah.
That every kid that had to sit through piano lessons and do scales when all they wanted to do is play, the Beatles.
Right, exactly, yep.
Right? You got to let yourself play the Beatles every once in a while, because otherwise you're going to hate it. So, yes, take some time to learn, to practice some of the, the basics to get your skill level up. But, try some stump work while you're doing it, just so that you get a feel for it and so you do something fun. Don't deprive yourself of the fun thing because you don't think you're worthy yet, because you're worthy right now. And the piece you make may not be the perfect piece, and who cares? Because it's going to be fun. And it isn't always about making the perfect piece. It's about making a piece that you enjoy making while you're making it. So you're worthy of any piece you want to make right now. So just do it.
Yes, that's it. You nailed it. We're done. Debbie Woodard returns on Sunday, Paint a Pony Designs, Destination Dallas. Tremendous conversation with her about what she's seeing in the needlepoint world and how the Destination Dallas went and the needlepoint shop day. So good conversation there. That's it. We're done. We're out. Thanks for listening.
Take care.